Oh, hello. It is January 23rd, Tuesday, January 23rd, 2024. And we're going to slow your roll once again. You know, it is in between whatever that division week was and now the championship week for the NFL. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're going to talk about it. Mm-hmm. You know, the games that just happened, the narratives that took place. And, you know, we're going to give our predictions of what's to come. But, you know, with it winding down, I'm going to branch out a little bit. We're going to talk hockey again for the first time in a while. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk those damn Red Sox and all in their front office again. And, yeah, that's kind of it in terms of total topics.
Yes.
But we're going to get deeply into all of them and gut them for all that they have and sell their remains and turn a profit.
Yeah.
And Dom, why don't you gut the Buffalo Bills to get us started then?
Oh, yes. And by the way, regular contributor Brian Salem back
in
the house.
Who are we?
As usual during the football season.
I haven't been here to do a real intro in a while. Yeah, I'm Jesse Caulfield, writer for the Aqua Report. That's Dominic, who's going to gut the Bills in a second. Mm-hmm. Local broadcaster and yes, frequent guest during the football season, Brian Salem.
Hi.
Hi.
And welcome back from Florida, by the way. I've been waiting to say this in person. Welcome back.
Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed the nice weather down there.
It wasn't that nice weather, actually. Well, it was better than here.
I was listening to the football games on my headphones while I was working.
Plowing. Yeah. Snow.
Plowing and shoveling.
Well,
and
fun fact, the day before I leave for Florida, it snows. Day after I come back, it snows. So
that's what you get.
That's funny. The first one was far worse than the second, though. Although, that second one did end up being a lot worse than people thought it was going to be. But anyway, with that, let's move on to a place where it snows all the time, horribly, and they just love their Bills, but they just keep shooting them in the foot. And that is on to the Bills, who once again, for the third time, drop a playoff game to the Kansas City Chiefs. And this has to be the most agonizing of all of them, because this is the one that felt like it should be different. They came in with the better season. They came in with the perceived better roster, particularly offensively. You know, after some struggles, they went through it, right? But they found their way. They had developed a run game. The backups had started to play well on the defensive thing. After firing the offensive coordinator, they found their footing. It was no more Josh Save Us. And the Chiefs were, this is about the most down the Chiefs have ever been, particularly offensively at times, struggling to score 20 points. But what happened? Buffalo once again reverted back to kind of Josh Allen Save Us. They asked him to throw the ball 39 times to Mahomes' 23. Isaiah Pacheco had 97 rushing yards. Josh Allen was once again asked to lead Buffalo in rushing. Mahomes, as much as we want to praise him, they didn't even ask him to do a whole lot. Just play efficient. We'll run it with Pacheco and all that. But the other thing that makes this such a devastating loss is just the way it played out. I mean, the Bills were 3 of 4 in the red zone, 7 of 14 on third down. They didn't turn the ball over once. And they had the ball for 14 more minutes than the Kansas City Chiefs, dominating time of possession. And they still couldn't win. This is one of those franchise changing losses in a way. Now, I'm not saying the window's completely closed, because obviously Josh is in the peak of his powers. There's plenty of things here. Stephon Diggs should not be on this team next year, though. We talked about that coming into the season with the drama. This needed to be the last year. It appears maybe he's even lost a step anyway, and you can't have somebody crying on the sideline all the time about that, particularly when he wants to cry about not getting the ball and then drops a 65-yard pass. But be that as it may, here's the other problem. You came back from the dead, overtook the Dolphins, went on a complete heater at the end of the season, and you lose in a close game after a missed field goal, so it becomes hard to fire Sean McDermott. But you are now 0-4 in the playoffs against the elite quarterbacks in the AFC, 0-3 to Mahomes, 0-1 to Joe. Also, I believe they're 0-2 to Joe Burrow in the regular season as well. Now, I know they've beaten the Chiefs a few times, but they can't beat Burrow in the Bengals regular season or postseason. So it becomes such a crossroads of, like, can you really just run this whole thing back? And I've said before, I don't think Sean's a bad coach, but he's the kind of coach that probably is not going to get this team or maybe most teams over the hump. He's a great guy to bring in when the franchise is in chaos. He will organize things. He will right the ship, and he will be a decent coach. But it seems that maybe he's that guy that will always be a step below come playoff time. And yeah, I mean that's my thoughts on Buffalo and this situation. You're kind of stuck. I mean, if they fired him, I'd understand it. If they didn't fire him, I would understand why you can't fire him. So they're kind of just stuck on the treadmill hill. And the other thing is, you could so tell Kansas City is just so in their head. They were in their head last night. They're going to be more in their head after this game. I mean, that final drive, they have two plays, have running Jared Cook just straight into the line because they're freaked out about giving the ball back to Mahomes with too much time. But it's like, dude, you got to score first. And they settle for a 44-yard field goal in the end that Bass then misses. I will say that the Bass field goal and the fact that the Chiefs fumbled it does kind of take the pressure off Sean for his egregious decision to try and run a fake punt on a 4th and 5 with what? Was there still like 12 minutes left to go in the game?
It wasn't that bad, but there was...
It was a lot of time still to go in that game. And a 4th and 5 from your own 30.
I think it was like 6.5 minutes.
So Sean does get bailed out for what was his fireable offense during the game, but you could so tell the Chiefs are in their heads. Running the ball straight into the line, more worried about the clock than they are about scoring on the drive. So, but yeah, you're stuck on the treadmill. I don't really know where Buffalo goes from here. I could defend either side that they go to. I don't know if you guys want to react or who wants to react to that first, but.
Allow me.
Go for it.
I agree with that 1,000%. I can see both sides. A very good argument from both sides. Fire McDermott, don't fire McDermott. But I mean, at this point, you know, he's got to go. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's gonna get this team over the hump.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, time and time again, you know, you read the stats off 0-4 in the playoffs against elite quarterbacks in the conference, 0-3 against the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't just continually run this back year after year after year and keep putting basically the entire weight of the franchise on Allen's shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to run him into the ground and he's going to be the Dan Marino of this generation.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. You know, it's the old saying, you know, the definition of crazy is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. And Patrick and Joe Burrow aren't going anywhere. And if this was the year to get the Chiefs, it felt like this was the year.
Yeah. You know, I like, this was the first time that I felt really, you know, really sure that Buffalo is going to break through this year.
And the first time you ever saw this matchup and thought, oh, Buffalo's the better team.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. You know, and I knew that Mahomes and Pacheco and Allaire would give Buffalo fits, you know, because who was out? Milano was out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, part of the reason they ran the ball so effectively is Buffalo had some injuries. But listen, that happens, man. No one's coming into the postseason 100%.
Yeah. And so this is sort of goes back to what I said to you guys before we started here. Defensive play calling, hello.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even on plays, you know, where Mahomes isn't running for 5 yards here, 7 yards there, you know, Pacheco's getting 4 to 6 a clip. Like, just all across the board, you're giving up huge chunk plays to, again, a Chiefs team that is not at the height of their powers right now. Well, yeah, I mean, they are, but
not offensively.
They certainly don't have quite the same juice that they've had, at least since Mahomes came into the league.
No.
So I think you had to kiss the seat of this man's pants for 20 years. Go get Belichick.
You can't do that. That looks bad.
Yeah, I don't think the Bills, Mills and Buffalo would probably hate that. But Jesse, thoughts?
Well, one,
I mean, I'm sure you're going to be a fire Sean McDermott guy. Me and you were saying that during the season, and I still don't disagree. It's just, I understand why it's hard to do.
I'll get there. Mm-hmm. Because I want at least a little vindication, because I sat here last week being like, I mean, come on.
Do you trust the Bills? Yeah.
And I didn't. I really didn't. Sadly, I still put them in the parlay. But they let me down. But
I bet you trusted Buffalo more than Dallas, at least, though.
Well, no, actually. Not at least.
Wow.
Because at least, like, I mean, maybe last second I did. But, like, throughout the week, I was the whole time I was like, Bills could really lose this game. But for the most of the week with the
Dallas game,
I was like, Dallas is going to kick their ass. But then the closer we got to game time, I'm like, I think Jordan Love's going to kick their ass. Anyway,
Dallas going to Dallas.
But, you know, the reason I thought that was because, like, well, these are the Chiefs. They've been there, done that. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not dead until they're truly dead. That's still Patrick Mahomes. Travis Kelce still has something in the tank. That's still Andy Reid. That stuff. Mm-hmm. But on the other end, it's like, well, those are still the Buffalo Bills, and they buffaloed. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, yeah, Sean McDermott can get credit because, like, oh, they got it together in the middle of the year, and they've really fixed it, and they're the hottest team in football. But it kind of proves that Sean McDermott is really the thing holding them back. Mm-hmm. They changed the OC. They changed the play caller. And then Josh Allen stopped throwing picks. Mm-hmm. And then they started to roll. And then they started to run the ball well. Mm-hmm. Sean McDermott didn't fix anything. Mm-hmm. Some other guy came in and did what Brian Daboll did a little bit ago. Mm-hmm. Nothing to do with Sean McDermott, actually. And then when it came down to it, you get to the games where it really comes down to, you know, getting your players ready, mm-hmm. mentally ready, prepared for that game, game situational. It all failed. Mm-hmm. It all faltered. And that falls on Sean McDermott's feet.
Situationally, he seems like a guy who panics. His teams play and tight, then the team and seems he to panic. Panics.
So, yeah, it seems that way. And
that
then
fake punt was I'm a panicking call.
Then he's like, I'm a call on the dead guy to go run a fake punt because that'll make a great story, bro. No, that was terrible. And he got bailed out by the Chiefs relying way too much on, was it Mecole Hardman? Uh-huh. And then, yeah, they get the fumble out of bounds. God wanted them to win. But Sean McDermott didn't make the right calls and didn't prepare his team enough. I still blame Sean McDermott. And I think the change in the middle of the season and then them turning it on with a new play caller, I think that really shows that Sean McDermott doesn't really add anything to this team. Mm-hmm. They limped along with him, and then some other guy comes in to fix the offense because he doesn't have any clue how to do that. Mm-hmm. And they get better. Sure, like, all right, the defense is decent. Mm-hmm. But, like, when it comes down to facing Patrick Mahomes or Joe Burrow, even if it's close late in the game and they're winning, mm-hmm. well, he always fails that.
Yeah. The problem, too, is like, yes, the defense is decent, but when you watch him in these big games,
what does he add?
It seems like he's getting out-coached. Well, he adds something because he's a defensive play caller, and their defense is good, usually.
But
the problem is
time,
in the biggest moments, in these apex matchups, you watch it, and it looks like he's getting out-coached. Like, the Chiefs were so efficient. I think the Chiefs only faced 5 third downs. Like, they were just so efficient.
I don't think they punted.
That Cincy game the year before, it was like hot knife through butter. It was just all drawn up so well. It wasn't Patrick scrolling out, gets by, you know, backyard football, makes some big plays, and you're like, well, I can't prepare for that. No, it was 17 of 23, efficient, barely faced third downs. Pacheco's running for 4.5 yards a carry. Like,
and they only,
X's and O's, man. It looked like they got out schemed again.
Like, Reed plays with everyone, mm-hmm. but I feel like he really plays with McDermott.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's starting to feel, it feels, the Chiefs are feeling a little bit like the later stage, like Pat's dynasty a little bit. Especially when, like, you know, Sean McDermott and the Bills are our Steelers. Super talented quarterback, big, strong arm, explosive players. At times in these matchups, we look at the rosters and say Buffalo's better. But there's something about the matchup, and there's something about the coaching. Bill just toyed with Mike Tomlin, and Reed looks like he dances circles around Sean.
I mean, hell, you could make an early dynasty comparison, too.
Well, yeah, you can.
Those early Pats-Colts matchups?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Bill, the way he used to toy with Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
Chiefs didn't punt in that game until there was, like, 8.5 minutes left. That looks so bad on your defensive play caller, uh-huh. Mr. Head Coach.
Listen, I know Reed's tough, and they have that championship mentality, so you know they're going to raise their level. But at the end of the day, this is still an offense that struggled to score 20 points a game. And they didn't punt until 8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. That's as bad as it looks. It can look. So, I mean, I don't know if they're going to make a move. I'm not even going to speculate if they are, because it's just such a tough call to make considering the way the season ended and how you finished, how you won the division again. Like, it's scary because you could make the wrong hire and then you completely suck.
I mean,
but
if you want to just win another division and celebrate that and make the division
divisional round
again and like parade that around, go for it. Keep Sean McDermott. But he's never going to get you over the top. Yeah. He's probably never going to get you to a Super Bowl. He just can't.
No, I don't think he
and
can.
He's clear. It's been how many years of this? He's not learning. I know. He's not learning. Mm-hmm. He's not learning the deeper knowledge of like how to really
and it's probably only gonna get
game
worse
these situations.
Because it just gets more and more in your head. Like you ain't going to be more loose when you play the Chiefs next time after this one.
Probably not.
So
I know Belichick to the Bills is a pipe dream, obviously, and the two biggest shoes still waiting to drop is Harbaugh and Vrabel. Mm-hmm. Like, go get one of those two.
Yeah. You would too.
Vrabel would be good. I think Vrabel would.
I mean, it's one of those things that maybe, you know, behind closed doors, you give one of those two a call and you don't fire Sean until you think that they're interested in taking the job. But I don't know. I think you have to consider it at least. But with that, I think we can move on quickly to rapid fire news, Jesse.
I just realized.
Oh, did you skip it? Hey, listen, well, if you didn't do the news thing, that's
well,
fine.
I wrote it down. I didn't write anything down for it.
Ah, we can skip it. We've skipped it so many times.
So rapid, there's nothing for it.
Yeah. The only thing to say is the Dallas Cowboys announced that Mike McCarthy will be back coaching next season, which we'll get into that probably next week. Absolutely ludicrous. You're going to have a lame duck head coach. I want to see what the Vegas over-under is. I guarantee I'll be betting the under.
It's going to be even funnier because, like, Dan Quinn was supposed to be one of those hot commodities, which I know he's been pushed to the back burner because of Belichick, Vrabel, and Harbaugh.
Uh-huh.
But he's still – he's getting interviews.
Yeah.
So Mike McCarthy might have to do everything next year.
He's at least going to have to find a new DC.
No, he'll just be that play caller, too. He'll just call that sound of the ball himself.
Yeah, right.
Does Bill take a year off to wait for this opening?
Considering he's only been called by the Falcons, I would if I was him.
And those talks are starting to cool off a little bit.
Well, they just talked to somebody else as well. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens with Bill in that. The only reason that that's the only call the only reason that that's the only call that Bill got is because there was only three jobs that made sense, I thought, for Bill. And that was the Falcons, the Eagles, and the Cowboys. And the Cowboys and the Eagles are not firing their head coaches. Because you're not – like, Bill's not going to do a rebuild.
Suddenly the Chargers don't make sense to Dom.
I mean, maybe, but I don't know. Didn't it always feel like it was kind of Jim Harbaugh or a bust for them?
I still think that's too expensive.
I've heard other than interviewing their own guy in the building, which is Kellen Moore, which, by the way, every NFL team does. You always interview the guy in your own building, even if you know you're not going to hire him. But I've heard other than that, they haven't really given calls to anyone outside the organization except for Jim Harbaugh.
I saw another one. I don't remember who it was.
Okay.
But I was back in Florida.
Okay. But I don't know. They've just felt like Jim or nothing. So, but anyway, let's move on to the Chiefs a little bit real quickly. I want to talk about them because we talked about it feels like a little bit late dynasty Pats things. This season particularly feels like late dynasty Pats because they're not at the peak of their powers. They're not as good. Where so many times this year have wanted to take out the shovels and bury them. They've looked dead. But, you know, they figure it out during the regular season and they play their best football at the end of the year. And in this case, they play their best football in the playoffs. I said like. I didn't say the same. I don't think they're beating the Ravens. But we'll get to that later in the show when we preview the rounds. But you do got to give them credit. Andy's figured some stuff out. They have fixed the offensive line over the past month. It was not that great of an O-line. Kelce has shown the championship mentality, the championship toughness. It looks like he's lost a step. But, again, when it's crunch time, when it matters, he'll find a way to make plays. Patrick has stayed with it, continue to go to MVS. I don't know.
Most valuable what?
No, MVS. Scantling.
Yeah.
Valdez. Oh, Marquez Valdez Scantling.
I was trying to, like, most valuable.
You know? Kadarius Toney's not on the field anymore. That's probably a good thing for them. I did say, hey, that's a big blow for Buffalo when he wasn't playing.
Yeah,
they've realized they needed to pare down the offense and really rely on the run game with Pacheco. So, yeah, it feels like their ability because of coaching and just be there, din that championship mentality will make them play above their talent level when it matters.
I don't necessarily think it's feeling like end of Patriots dynasty. I feel like it's that little middle period, that little false spring. Everyone said it's like, it's over. When Welker left for the Broncos, Aaron Hernandez turned out to be a murderer. And it was like that year of like the emergence of Edelman. They brought in Amendola, but he was kind of injured then. Like that Kemble Tompkins that year.
Uh-huh. 2013.
That's what. Okay. Oh, you're right. Yeah, because it happened there in the same time as the Red Sox World Series run that year. But anyway, it feels like that period.
Okay.
Where everyone's like, yes, it's ending. Uh-huh. They're not as good. They lost Tyreek and they're losing Travis Kelce and stuff like that. But it's just like that little in between where they could retool and then bring in all these other guys that become the second generation.
Which is what they're going to do.
Well, yeah, Patrick's still young. Mm-hmm. There's still pieces here, especially on that defense.
I really expect Mike Evans to be on this team next year.
Maybe. I wouldn't be shocked.
I mean, they're going to go out and buy some sort of wide receiver.
At least attempt.
Someone's coming in. Maybe it's Pittman. Maybe it's, you know, I forget the other ones on the market. But I think those are the two that make the most sense.
Maybe.
Could see Ridley going there. Calvin Ridley. He'd be a good fit.
I don't know. Something about him screams to me that he's an unreliableness to him that I feel like Casey's like, listen, he might be talented, but we were unreliable all season long at wide receiver. We need someone a bit more, you know.
Do you think T. Higgins would ever go there? Or is he still like, listen, there's still Cincinnati in me, and I don't want to go play for you?
I think as long as the money's right, he would.
I feel like any big-name free agent going to KC, coming from another in-conference team, is sort of like Durant going to Golden State a little bit.
I guess.
And I don't know. They don't have that Bill Belichick, Tom Brady effect where people just like I said, when I had that Chris Long quote last week, it's like when Bill calls, you have to go.
They're probably not there yet, but I don't know. Andy Reid, a lot of people love Andy Reid. He's got quite the reputation,
sure,
especially for offensive players. So I get that.
I don't think there's a single person in the NFL that dislikes personally Patrick Mahomes, but I don't know. They don't quite have that. They seem still beatable.
Yes.
I mean, I say that this year where there's clearly like, this is the most vulnerable they've been since Patrick Mahomes became the starter. Uh-huh. But like, I don't know. The Patriots felt, maybe I was biased because I was young and dumb and this was my team. The Patriots felt invincible.
At times.
Yeah.
I thought
and
sort of the end.
Want to be a part of that.
I thought the end of the dynasty, they didn't. I thought at the end of the dynasty every year I saw the media and the people breaking out the shovels saying it was over. And then come December, all of a sudden they'd click and, oh, crap, they look like the best team in football again.
After the Eagles Super Bowl, that's the loss.
Yeah.
That's when I was like, all right, maybe it's starting to falter. But up until then, I was still like, this is still the greatest unstoppable force.
I understand what you mean. And I think KC will go back to that probably in a year or two. It's just this is the lull year. This is the in-between. And yet they're still this good. Now, I don't love their chances against Baltimore. We'll get into that more later. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Can you guys have any more thoughts on the Chiefs this year? Or next year? Just what it's going to look like.
Do you guys think Travis Kelce is going to actually retire? Because that rumor's really starting to spread.
No.
I know.
No?
No.
I kind of think he's played so well in this playoffs that he's not going to. I think he's going to have one more year in him.
You can't have both Kelces retire.
I know, right?
Even though Jason Kelce was the star of that Chiefs Bills game.
And you know what?
Especially if Travis is still – if that power couple's still going, the league loves that draw.
And they'll be like, you can't retire.
There's a huge demographic now that turns on CBS every Sunday for Travis Kelce's girl – Travis Kelce's girlfriend.
Yeah,
I know. I will say
Taylor
this, though.
Taylor Swift's boyfriend.
I will say this, though.
Yeah.
If I can get Jason Kelce up in the stands for the rest of the games, too, just pounding beers alongside them all, I can live with Kansas City moving on more in this playoffs. It becomes more bearable to me.
That's what I mean, though. Like, there's a lot of reasons I think you could dislike Travis. He's kind of a douchebag. He's an admitted idiot. Mm-hmm. His girlfriend's annoying to NFL fans. He's on the Patriots, the modern Patriots team, so it's easy to hate him for that. Other than being on Philly, there's like no reason you can talk me into hating Jason Kelce.
I love Jason.
Or I guess maybe it's his brother's.
Dude,
Travis.
I love.
But again, I came around to Travis too.
Did you see
Pfizer?
Did you see the part though when he jumps out of the press box and into the stands, chugging beers with fans, shirtless? And
well, then he's
such a man of the people.
He's picking up kids and like walking them to the box and being like, "That's Taylor Swift." It's like, okay.
Just getting so hammered. I saw the funniest tweet. I forget who put it, But it's like, you know what? He goes, I would turn into the Pro Bowl if we had offensive linemen drinking competitions. He's like, those 300 plus pound men can put down some serious amount of beers.
I bet.
And Jason was loaded by halfway through the second quarter. But
they're all a foot and a half taller and 130 pounds lighter, but I'd throw my name in that hat, I tell you why.
But yeah, I think that's all we think about KC. We'll get into their actual matchup with Baltimore later in the show. Let's go quickly into the Lions-Buccaneers games. Jesse, I'll let you start. Any thoughts on that matchup? Not just the game itself, but you know, like when we do these matchup ones, right? Like we all watch the playoff games, so we all kind of can see what happened. It's a little bit more like in perspective of their season and then, you know, after that as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess going into that game, I was the one who gave, I'm pretty sure I was the one that gave Buccaneers a little more credit. Like, all right, they could still win this game. Mm-hmm. And I want to give them a lot of credit for the whole season. Mm-hmm. We were listening to him as one of those teams where, like, maybe you should just tank, bro. Maybe you should just bench Baker because he might actually win you a game or two. Mm-hmm. That's your quarterback now.
Yeah.
And, like, hey, there's actually reason to not hate the idea of Todd Bowles being your coach for the next couple of years. Mm-hmm. Although not calling that timeout and just letting the game end was bizarre. Mm-hmm. And I don't really know why he did that. I didn't think you were going to win anyway. But, like, it's the believability. It's just the, you know, things can happen. Anyway. But the Lions, I don't think, and we'll get to it, I don't think that you're going to be in the Super Bowl. It's still a huge hill to overcome, even though I think, especially without Debo, San Fran is vulnerable. Mm-hmm. But, and we talked about it last week, Campbell getting these guys to just the believability on that team, mm-hmm. since they were bad, like he is maybe revolutionizing the head coaching position. Mm-hmm. Because I talked about it last week, like, yeah, there's these coaches. Like, what do you actually do around here? You're kind of just the hype man. You're a culture guy. And that's fine. If you got at least, you know, play callers on either side of you that are really good. And maybe he'll lose that, especially since Ben Johnson's a hot commodity. And I know, I can't remember his name, but the DC is also getting some interviews for head coaching jobs. But if you create a culture the way he's created it there, you're going to have that Bill Belichick, Tom Brady. People want to come play for you. And it's like, all right, you might lose one of the better play callers in the league.
Also,
but someone is going to want to come work for you.
I was just about to say that. Yeah.
And then people will, again, the players will want to come play for you and all that stuff. And that itself will create just a team that can live on, even if you're not a really true contender, mm-hmm. because maybe you lost your coach. You might have an Eagles situation where, all right, the team's still good, but we might need to really fine-tune our guy here. But that culture is so perfect. Mm-hmm. That it could literally just make the team live on for what it is and limp on, even if it, like, you know, they take a step back, mm-hmm. because people will want to be there. They want to coach there. They want to play there and they want to work for that man. Mm. And hell yeah, good for Detroit because, you know, Detroit Lions, they've had good for you. You have something.
Mm-hmm. I still think Dan Quinn is probably the biggest meathead coach I've ever seen in my life. But what I love about that organization is that from the moment they brought him in and said, this is the guy we're going to commit to and we're going to see it through, you could tell that, you know, they meant the brass when they said that. They said it with conviction and they, you know, they believed in their mission and what they were trying to build with the people they wanted to see build it. And I love that they're seeing it through with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it was bad at first.
Oh, it was bad.
At least on the product on the field.
Like, and we all say NFL stands for not for long, and it does. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, a lot of these situations, you see a guy get fired, and you go, well, I mean, he had a lot of the right pieces there. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple of bounces go this way. Couple of one-score games go that way, and mm-hmm. all of a sudden, boom. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, exactly. The other thing about guys like Dan Campbell, right, and when you set that culture and you make sure that your team has an identity, it helps you so much in crisis. Like, Sean McDermott's the play caller. I don't know exactly what they lean their hat on, though. I don't know what their identity is other than Josh Allen, save us, you're talented. With Detroit, when it becomes crunch time, when it becomes crisis situation or situational football, Dan has instilled in all of those guys, we are about being aggressive. We will not be passive. So whether it's right call, wrong call, no matter the situation, we all know what we are about. We are about always trying to go out and just win the game in that play, in this situation, at that time. And at times, maybe it's annoying. At times, I thought he's wrong. The going for it after the penalty against Dallas on the two-point conversion, I thought, was really stupid. But at the end of the day, they all know that that's what they're going to hang their hat on. And I do think that there is something about that when you go into games, these pressure situations, at least already knowing what we're about and what we are going to do when the moment comes. That is calm and peaceful.
Also, to know your coach, whether it's naivete or his just esoteric knowledge of the game, you know that no matter what, my coach is going to believe in our ability to get it done in crunch time, in the hardest situations. Yeah, he's going to call on us, and we're like, well, we
that instills confidence.
Yeah.
It helps you not play as tight, which is what we shred the Bills for time and time again and have done this year. The other thing, obviously, we talked about it last week, the front office one. The other thing we need to reexamine, and we've talked about this for a while, I talked about it, I think, at the end of last year when I said you can't not put this guy in the top 10 quarterback class right now, and that's Jared Goff. Now, are there things about him that are not always ideal? For sure. Does he need to be kept upright and clean? Yeah, he does. Is he non-mobile? Yeah, he's pretty non-mobile, but he sees the field. He throws a really pretty ball. He anticipates and throws guys open. He makes all the throws on the field that you can make, and he's now going to get his second team to an NFC championship. So it's time to realize that it wasn't all just Sean. A lot of it was Jared too. And he's probably a top 10 quarterback in this league right now, especially with some of the guys that have taken falls. I mean, maybe. Where are we putting Jalen Hurts these days?
I don't know.
Dak can't make an NFC championship game to save his life.
But Dak had a good year. Regular season, he had a good year.
He did. So did Goff.
It's just like we also know that like Goff is – situationally, there's just, you know, him outside of a dome in weather.
No, I know.
But, like, you know, there's a couple guys like that nowadays. I feel like that's just the modern NFL. There are dome guys and there are weather guys.
Exactly. And listen, there is a clear drop off from the top three, four guys to everybody else. And definitely a drop from those guys to Jared Goff. And when I say top 10, he's probably not five. I probably put him seven. But he's a top quarterback in this league right now. His second team is in the NFC Championship. He's got multiple playoff wins.
You know, both those teams that he got to the NFC Championship game with had some dynamite run games.
They did.
But, yeah, sure, he's here. But, you know, I'll give credit to him and the coaching staff. The coaching staff, one, to understand his limitations, what he does well, what he doesn't, and to play up that. And to mask that when they know when he's in a bad situation. And Jared Goff to understanding his own limitations, what he can do, and being a team player about it and stuff like that. And knowing sometimes the best thing I can do for this team is to hand the ball to David Montgomery or dump it off to Gibbs and let them be talented enough to fix it.
Yeah. But, I mean, when you're thinking about it right now, like, who's better than him? Obviously the Allen, Mahomes, Joe Burrow. I would still say Stafford, Justin Herbert. And then after that,
Rodgers.
Is he anymore?
He looked great for that one play.
That had that handoff?
No, well, that all right, the two play, the drop back.
I can't even rank Aaron.
He took
right
that
now.
Sack perfect.
I can't rank Aaron right now.
I will.
Okay. I just saw Jordan Love get the team Aaron couldn't get to the playoffs.
As Jesse once said, I will. As I should say, as Jesse eloquently once said, I will put my balls on this table.
And say Aaron's better than Jared right now.
And okay, say maybe. That Aaron will still be good.
Okay.
And all right, probably better than Goff.
So we put six. Who else?
Kyler.
Is he?
He's certainly more talented.
But is he a better quarterback right now in the NFL than Jared Goff?
No.
I don't know if he is.
No.
I think it's close. I don't think he is. Is Stroud already better than Jared Goff?
Might.
He might be.
Yeah, he's certainly. Yeah.
All right. So yeah. That's seven. I think this is about seven. So we got Jared Goff.
Did we say Lamar?
Can we wait?
Lamar 8.
Can we wait for Stroud to validate it?
Yeah, he already won a playoff game. Against a very good Browns defense.
Joe Flacco.
No. Not even close. Not even close. We have Jared Goff at 8 right now.
Regular season Joe Flacco.
I can, Geno, no.
No.
Russell Wilson, no.
No.
Brock?
No.
Eh.
Not yet.
I didn't like Brock that last game, which we'll get to.
We'll get to that. Brock is getting still way too much hate, and I'll tell you why. But no, Jared Goff is better than Brock Purdy still right now.
There's a middle ground that's true, that's correct for Brock, and no one can find it.
Kirk?
Is Kirk
no.
better
than no.
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 Close, but no.
You know what? We should change the category. It should be the category of Jared Goff now, not the category of Kirk.
What? Like Jared Goff is sort of the barometer of which we rank if you're good or very good or elite.
He's the best middle quarterback in
no,
the NFL.
No, he's better
tonight.
Than middle. He's better than middle. He is. He is a solid NFL starting quarterback. An upper tier solid starter.
If he wins the Super Bowl, does that break the Do we then put him almost elite, or do we say, like, wow, you can win a Super Bowl with an average everyday quarterback?
So then he's no. Joe Flacco.
He was a first-round pick.
Joe Flacco was elite.
He was a first overall pick for a reason, guys. He is a
– He doesn't look like one.
To me
– He looks like a system quarterback.
To me
– You're right. He is ugly.
To me, the epitome of average quarterback is Dak Prescott.
He's not handsome enough.
What, Jared?
Jared Goff's not handsome enough to truly be a first overall pick.
Oh, my God.
He's not.
Dak is.
I took one look at him and be like, no.
Dak is my epitome of what an average quarterback is.
Was Peyton really though?
Handsome was different in the 90s.
It's true though.
No, Jared is an upper tier starting quarterback. Upper tier. Not. He's not special. He's not great, but he's very good.
Very good is strong. Still, I feel.
No, it's not.
What's better to you, very good or really good?
Very good.
He's really good. He's very good. We listed five guys who are special.
Guys is great.
He's the lesser of the
five guys who are special. Who are special. Three others after that.
I need to slow it.
Three others after that that are close, and then this next category, which is about two or three other guys, which are. Very good. Then after that, everyone gets average and then terrible.
The problem is I don't really know what a Jordan Love really is. I don't know what a Stroud really is. I don't know what Hurts really is anymore.
Okay, now if you ask me right now, going forward. Wait. So if you were to ask me right now, going forward, would you rather have Jared Goff or Jordan Love? I would say Jordan Love.
Yeah.
Because he is more talented.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he can play outside.
But if you did tell me right now, just for this playoff run, right, you know, the next two games, would you rather have Jared Goff or Jordan Love? I would say Jared Goff.
End of the season, Jordan Love was fantastic.
I know. He made some really bad decisions in that fourth quarter, though. He did.
You know what?
The last one, I'll even give him more of a pass on because he's like just trying to make a play. But the other pick he threw in that fourth quarter, though, was, you know, it's not great either.
Jared Goff could look hella stupid.
Under pressure, I get that.
Against this San Fran D.
We'll see. I think it's getting a little overrated than the Niners. But anyway, with that, we're going off the topic.
Brock Purdy's fault.
Too much. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about that Packers-Niners game. Then we'll move on to a few other things before we get into previewing the championship round. Stick with us, guys. And we're back here at Slow Your Roll. During the break, we were ranking quarterbacks in the NFL by fast food and where Jared Goff fits into there. I said either Waffle House or Wendy's. You said Baconators are too good, though.
Hashtag Goffle House.
Goffle House.
Baconators are above Jared Goff. Let's get that straight. First and foremost, ladies and gentlemen. We're all sitting here with
Can he be Chick-fil-A?
We're all sitting
Why?
Here.
Why? We both just agreed that Popeyes is better than Chick-fil-A, but Chick-fil-A is better than KFC, so, you know, we got that solid in between.
I think.
Okay, wait.
I got
But no, I got a perfect thing for the Chick-fil-A
Jared
thing.
Goff is Dave's hot chicken because he's better than KFC, but he's not as good as Chick-fil-A.
But Chick-fil-A's limited. They don't have the largest menu. You got to get chicken. There's nothing else.
He's Panera.
But I heard Dave's hot chicken is a little
overrated. Isn't Panera too well-made? Is it too high-end?
No.
To be Jared?
No, they just have cushioned seats.
Panera's for people that can't afford Starbucks.
Panera's
way better.
I don't want
to go to Starbucks.
Yeah. But wait a minute. I don't know. There's too much variety on Panera's menu to be Jared Goff.
I don't know. I think the Taco Bell one nailed it.
Okay, fine. Maybe he's Taco Bell. I hate Taco Bell.
We're all sitting around here with our schmezzers in our hand trying to figure out how to rank Jared Goff in terms of, you know, what do we do?
I think he's
Figured as a society,
the problem is
we all kind of collectively agree on how to tier and rank fast food restaurants.
I don't think we do. Because I raised that problem. It's like just on popularity, Burger King is up there. But like if you actually ask someone, no one likes Burger King.
All right, well, the average.
Yet somehow they're popular. It's kind of bizarre.
All right, well, the average citizen can rank fast food restaurants better than they can rank quarterbacks. So.
Also, was Panera fast food?
No.
I don't know.
That's the other issue. You know, I just don't think that's fast food.
It's Starbucks, though.
What defines fast food if you can get it on Uber Eats?
No, because I can get drive-through
situation.
I can get Tony C's at
Is Jared Goff one of those like fast food Chinese places?
Are those the same? I guess there's like Panda Express.
Yeah,
no one eats that.
Yeah,
I've never seen one in person.
Really?
At least I don't think I have.
There used to be one at the mall.
Which mall?
It still is there.
North Shore.
At North Shore.
Oh, there's one in the Liberty Tree.
No one goes there.
No, that's true.
No, that's
we only go there for the movies, and no one does that anymore.
That's Chipotle.
That is a Sea Lion sushi. Thank you.
Is he Chipotle?
I don't know.
It's too spicy.
Too spicy. I don't know, man.
Jared.
We got to move on.
Dunks.
Jared Goff looks like he would think salt was spicy.
You know what?
Could he be Dunks?
He could be Dunks.
Good cup of coffee.
Good, solid, dependable. No one thinks it's elite. No one thinks it's amazing.
Well, Goff doesn't have ice in his veins. I only drink iced coffee.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Mm. People only order iced coffee there.
He's certainly no cold brew.
You got a weird clarifications here. All right, we got to move on.
ADD radio.
Packers in the 49ers game. Your thoughts on this? I kind of thought. Right now, you can go.
Packers are definitely a Wendy's. 49ers definitely. Never mind.
Five guys.
I just want to say, I want to take a victory lap on
this
one.
They're even red.
Because I went back and listened to the last show, and so many people were trying to tell everyone that the Niners were going to blow them out. No respect for Green Bay. And I was like, I kind of think this is going to be a decent game. Like, I kind of think it's going to be close. Green Bay is going to put up points. Jordan Love is talented. They got three good wide receivers. Now with Aaron Jones back and healthy, it adds such a dynamic to this offense that makes it hard to stop. And I do think the Niners defense is getting a little overrated. This game was close. I think it should have been close. I'm not surprised it was close. I also think it tells you that this game against the Lions might be close, but we'll get there. But the other thing that I took away from this game, apart from the Brock Purdy stuff, the hate that Brock Purdy gets, I do want to give him credit at the end of the day. He made big throws when the game mattered. That slant throw after George Kittle made the drop when they had to have it, when Brandon Ayuk was covered and he put it in the exact perfect place to make him uncovered, that was a big-time throw by Brock. One of the best throws of the entire week by anyone in the NFL. So you got to give him his credit there. My thing is the Kyle Shanahan stuff, and Kyle is awesome, but he has a clear hole, and that is he is very rigid. His game plans are usually great, and they usually work. But if they're not working, or if somebody gets hurt and it throws the game into a loop, he is not really an adjuster when it comes to his offense. I think that became pretty clear. Early on in the game, they were spreading it out and throwing it way too much. And then Debo got hurt as well, and it kind of threw things into a bit of a tizzy.
Now, is that a San Fran problem, or is that a...
No, it's a Shanahan problem.
Shanahan problem, or is that starting to become sort of a league-wide problem?
No, I think some people...
Because I feel like there's teams losing a important player to injury or just getting thrown off script.
Well, there's a lot of average coaching in the league, so I expect an average coach to not be a great adjuster.
So maybe but that's Kyle, just what it is.
Yeah, but Kyle's better than average because his game script and his ability to do stuff is usually so successful and so good that he barely ever has to adjust. But in the few times that he does, I do think it's a bit of a problem for him. I think he's a bit rigid in that sense. Jesse, any thoughts? I have more to say too, but
I think Brock Purdy's like Eli Manning.
Okay. Oh, he makes better decisions than Eli, but yeah.
Maybe. Well, I also think like Eli Manning never quite played with a sporting cast the way Brock Purdy has around him right now.
That's true.
But like, there is a middle ground here. Brock Purdy either gets too much hate or way too much praise. Because like, you're right. And the reason I say Eli Manning is because like, there was some terrible decisions, some like really bad misses, overthrowing guys and stuff like that. Luckily, they didn't get picked off. Luckily, like for Brock Purdy. But then there is just he'll randomly throw that perfect one to Ayuk, and it makes me think of like that random perfect pass in Super Bowl, the second Super Bowl against to Mario Manningham, where it just fell in his lap. He'll just do that randomly. But I still think overall, he's still kind of too limited. I guess, you know, comparing him to Eli Manning means he's not. Eli won two. One against the greatest team ever assembled. But I feel like, you know, in these playoffs, it's obviously it's more apparent. You know, he's where his limitations are. He's, you know, been carried a little bit by CMC, by Debo. And as you lose Debo, you see kind of like where these limitations really lie. Again, he's good, especially since I think the quarterback play today is not as good as what I saw growing up with the Bradys, the Mannings, the Breezes, the Favres. So I guess it works out. He is a little in that Kirk Cousins range, that Jared Goff range.
Cracker Barrel.
And that's yeah, and that's good enough. By the way, George Kittle is 100% a grimace. but, like, I'm still one of the biggest things, and we'll get to it next, it's like, oh, I do think they're vulnerable to the Lions based on just who the Lions are and how they match up against each other. But, like, I think especially if you don't have Debo, I 100% think Jared Goff could out-duel Brock Purdy. It's just, could Brock Purdy get carried again by a CMC, a Kittle, Ayuk a little bit? And I don't know. I feel like I kind of, at this point, I'm feeling almost like you are the third best team remaining. Could be even make a case for the fourth best team remaining because just the Chiefs are just that well coached and that well put together, headstrong and mentally and all that stuff. Because I certainly think at this point, not only because the Ravens beat them, but like I think their win was more convincing, the Ravens. Not to say Dan Campbell's a better coach, but the culture I think is so much better in Detroit that, you know, if something goes wrong in Detroit, they're like, ah, we're the Lions. We got Dan Campbell. We'll just blitz our way and slam through a wall to get out of it. Meanwhile, you're right. I think with Shanahan, things start to go wrong, and maybe Brock Purdy finds out not the guys. They're like, all we have is the script, and we don't know what to do otherwise.
Yeah. No, I think that's a real thing. To the Brock Purdy stuff, I still think it's wild the amount of criticism. He's still in his second year. Like, Lamar won an MVP his second year, but did you see him in the playoffs? He looked like a deer in headlights. Like, the idea that we're comparing him to some of the guys that we compare him to in this league, and it's just his second year, his first full year starting, I still think is a little insane. Now, obviously, are there physical limitations that when you watch Jordan Love and Mahomes and Allen, he has, and he'll never get to that level as far as physically gifted? For sure. So there will be a process in which Brock to become an elite player like that will be a little bit different. He'll have to be eventually become a Peyton Manning, Tom Brady level X's and O's smart at the line. And that takes time. It's going to take a few years for him to get that smart. But that's the next evolution of Brock to get him to be an elite player. But I still think a lot of the criticism is ridiculous. The standard he's being held to right now is ridiculous. He's his second year playing. He's won multiple playoff games that he's at least started, and he's won a lot of games since becoming the starter, and they put up a lot more points than they ever did with Jimmy G. So, I don't know. That's my things on Brock. Are there things to be worried about? if they get inclement weather in a game, is that scare me a little bit? Because it was raining just a little bit early in that game, and it was definitely giving them problems. Check, 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 yes. If he's missing one of his bigger weapons, am I a little concerned? Yeah, I am. But I also would be concerned if any second-year quarterback was having one of his major weapons missing in the playoffs. So, I don't know. That's my thing on that.
It's part of learning to become great.
Yeah, learning.
Is honing, you know, honing those skills when, mm-hmm. you know, either your back's against the wall or you don't have your full arsenal. Mm-hmm.
But to his credit, Debo was out. His back was against the wall. And once it became crunch time, he made some big throws late in the game after not playing that well for the first three quarters. When it mattered, he made the throws and he made the plays. So that's a good learning experience. And it is a check in that box of, like, you can win a big game despite not having your best game.
Yeah, and then there is two ways to look at that. It's like, one, despite playing bad all day, when the moment came to win, he still did it. Mm-hmm. But there is the other end of that stick. It's like, well, you were bad all day, and one good drive isn't going to change the fact that you looked bad all day. Mm-hmm. Again, this is where the middle ground needs to come in. We can praise him because, yes, he did. Mm-hmm. He won the game in the end.
But
he balled up.
But the final piece I'm throwing in to switch it more into the positive one, which is this – you know, throw this piece in there. This is a recurring Kyle Shanahan hole, which is if the game script ain't right off the bat or something goes wrong, he historically as a coach does not do well. I mean, what was that stat? If he's trailing in the fourth quarter, he's like 0-1, something crazy, like just does not come from behind. So there is that to throw in to think about this performance of Brock Purdy as well, which is like, well, this is that classic Shanahan hole that we saw, which that few times, because he is so smart and so good on script, that, you know, this isn't usually a problem. But those few times it does happen, things snowball away from all the time.
Perhaps.
You definitely saw that when they faced the Ravens the first time this season.
Yeah.
And you saw it in other playoff games where they've lost.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's my thoughts. My thoughts on the Niners and that. Let's talk about the Packers. I mean, wait. You got some?
It felt like Fox broadcast couldn't get enough of Kyle Shanahan's record 0-30 in games where he's trailed by 7 or more points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
0-30.
Yeah, like that's a real thing.
That smells.
I mean, listen, it's hard to come from behind down 7, especially when he's had largely average to below average quarterbacks. It doesn't make him a bad coach. He's still one of the better coaches in the NFL. It's just that's his hole. But it's a real thing.
Yeah, at some point it's like 0-2 record, fine. 0-5 record,
Yeah, but 0-30, like that's a real
thing.
That's
damning. It's like, all right, dude, what are you not doing?
Yeah, there is something that you don't do well here. There's a hole that you have that that's costing you, and it's a real thing. So that's the other thing I throw into the Brock Purdy less than great performance in that playoff game against the Packers. So, do you have anything more to say on that? Or can we talk Green Bay here for a sec?
Yeah, we can move to the Packers.
Okay. I got to stop looking at Twitter sometimes during the NFL games because it just does annoy the crap out of me. Jordan Love throws one pick at the end of the game, and all of a sudden he's overrated and he's a bum.
That was an awful pick, though.
I know. That was some straight Brett Favre, like.
It is. That was, like. That's a total.
Yes, but it was also seemed like such a classic young player thing.
Yeah, but it's the
like Jordan,
one thing.
I know. It's the one thing you can't do. It's late in the game. He's thinking he has to press and make a play, and he does, but not quite that badly because it was like, hey, you still have multiple downs. Trust me, there's a little more time on that clock than what it looks like. There are ways to manipulate that. But it was still, you know, close to panic time where you just kind of have to try something. But
yeah,
still too early. They had plenty of downs to go. You can't quite do that. That's a teaching moment. It's a learning moment for a guy in his first year starting, just his second ever playoff game on the road. But I don't know. Just now he's suddenly a bum. Like this guy who took this roster that Aaron couldn't get to the playoffs, won a road playoff game as a 7.5-point favorite, and then against what has been the heavy favorite to make the Super Bowl all year in the NFC on the road, took them to the very end, had them on the brink.
Strong case to make. They should have won that game.
A strong case to make. And the second thing I'm going to say is Matt LaFleur, I think, has emerged as probably an elite head coach in the NFL. because now he's done it with two different quarterbacks. He did it with the superstar, got along with Aaron. Aaron likes Matt. Aaron has nothing but nice things to say about Matt. So he can clearly get along with the superstar, connect to the young guy and develop him. And I thought all day long, I thought he was out coaching Kyle Shanahan. Like, I thought all game long, he was running circles around Kyle and that coaching staff. And I thought it was very lucky win in the end by Shanahan and the Niners, who should have won that game, but the way it was played out looked like they probably should have lost it. But yeah, I thought LaFleur thoroughly outcoached Kyle and his staff.
Perhaps.
And we know he thoroughly outcoached the Dallas Cowboys the week before that.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, I mean, that was a terrible last play by Love. I don't give him that much crap for it. I didn't think you were coming back to win that game.
Probably not.
And like, you know, whether the desperate throw came on that down or like in another two plays, you felt like if there was any chance a desperate throw was going to need to be made, just rip the Band-Aid off, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, everyone wants to forget Andrew Carlson missed the 41-yard field goal that would have.
Yeah, you know. But they both missed a field goal in the end. So, I didn't really care about that one too much either. But I most of what I got from that game was, sure, I mean, a little bit of those, like, Shanahan in the playoffs again. I always say. Well, I don't usually say in the playoffs. I usually say end games. But, like, Shanahan in the moments. But also, like, I felt like a better quarterback than Brock Purdy would have made that game go a little far more smoother for San Fran. But again, whatever. They won in the end. But, you know, and I'll say this in defense of, I guess, Aaron Rodgers. And it's like, because Jordan Love took a team to the playoffs that Aaron didn't. It's like, neither Aaron nor that team wanted to be in that playoffs last year. They wanted to go home. But you're right. Jordan Love does not deserve nearly the hate he's probably getting right now. And I think it's just a lot of Aaron fanboys, Bears fans, Lions fans, maybe.
Oh, the Bears fans are pathetic.
It's just them talking crap on it. Because, like,
I know.
We all saw those stats they put up before the game against the Cowboys. Like, you can't look at that and be like, this guy sucks.
Yeah.
Because he made a silly play at the end of a playoff game that he was going to lose. Sorry. That doesn't change the final 8 weeks of the season where he was kind of the best quarterback in the league at that time, actually.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on my thing on LaFleur? Because I truly think after this season, both playoff games, I think he has emerged as an elite head coach of the NFL.
Perhaps.
Because he's done it with two different quarterbacks now. He's done it with a young kid he had to develop. This is a really young offensive roster. They had multiple injuries during the year, too. I mean, Watson, coming into their year, their best wide receiver was Christian Watson. Missed most of the season. Aaron Jones missed most of the season. Got through that, and as I said, out-coached McCarthy and Dan Quinn in that game, and then I thought out-coached Kyle Shanahan all night long.
The problem with that also is, like, sure, I think he's good, and I'm not going to look at this game and be like, well, I see a flaw here and a flaw there. Especially, actually, after Aaron leaves, and Aaron does talk well about him, because, like, you could have always, like, well, you let that happen. You're a bad culture guy. And it's like, no, he might have been like the thing desperately keeping that culture afloat.
I actually think he was, for sure.
But I also think there's a gap, along with the quarterbacks, the head coaches, a huge gap between the really good head coaches and even the average head coaches. Because a lot of these guys are like, everyone's so hype about Sean McVay. And then he kind of lost a coordinator, and everyone's like, I don't really like Sean McVay. He had a bounce back season, but there's a lot of these guys are like, oh, they have their little moment, and you're like, oh, look at that guy. Zach Taylor, I hyped up a little bit last year, didn't really like what I saw out of Zach Taylor so much this year. Kyle Shanahan has his moments, but there's a lot of things that kind of like really shake your head about Kyle Shanahan. A lot of it's that. Like, you know, Andy Reid, I think Pete Carroll kind of established himself as maybe that guy. Bill Belichick, Vrabel. Like, obviously, these are the really good head coaches in the league. And then I kind of think it falls way off. Maybe, and then, so where does LaFleur fall in that?
Well, I think
I think we
got to start talking about LaFleur at least in the same breath as, like, Shanahan and McVay.
Maybe, but, like, okay, sure. Because also the fact is he coaching really at an elite level, or is he just coaching circles around the Bears, McCarthy, the Eagles, And that's not as hard as it seemed to be even a couple months ago.
Except I think he coached circles about Shanahan last night, who still is, whatever you want to say, is at least on the upper echelon of coaching in the NFL right now.
Perhaps, yeah.
Yes. And, you know, the Sean, the thing that dings Sean, not a lot, but at least bring him down to everybody else's level is, well, Goff's made it another NFC championship game now. So, like, it clearly wasn't all you, Sean. Like, there's plenty of talent in there with Jared. So, you know, that thing before, you know, I carried this guy to the, like, I feel like that narrative has got to be at least a little dead now.
I mean, a little bit.
So, yeah. I know, Brian, any thoughts on my thing on Matt LaFleur there?
Let's see the follow-up.
Okay. We'll see how the rest of the year, we'll see how next year goes and stuff. I think it's going to go really well. You got three young wide receivers. The division, Bears are in flux. I mean, they'll probably draft Caleb Williams, which is good. You just can't trust that organization. You know, he'll have to battle it out with Dan Campbell and the Lions and for that division stuff. That's going to be tough. Like, the Lions aren't going anywhere. A lot of their players are young. So I think there's nothing but up for this team right now. They're so young. They got to fix the defense, but you know what? That Matt's not the defensive coordinator or play caller, so. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Jesse?
Yeah?
It's your time for me to take a break.
Okay. Let's talk hockey. You know, this is kind of one of those subjects that, like, you know, we've possibly been like, oh, we could talk about this. We'll push it back. It's not a big deal. We can push it back. And if we talked about it even, like, last week, I would have been like, this team ain't really it. This team's falling apart. It's too many injuries. It's not quite deep enough. And then we just had, like, the last week where, like, you looked fantastic.
Against really good teams.
Yeah, especially last night against the
Jets.
Winnipeg Jets. I kept thinking New York. The Winnipeg Jets, who up until last night went, like, 13 straight games without letting in 3 goals. And went like 2 months without letting in 4 goals. And yeah, you did it. You did it to him last night. And there's, you know, coming out of the Christmas break, it's kind of like, you know, it's that time of the year where, like, the real good teams start to establish themselves and break away from the pack. The bad teams and, like, the middling teams start to fall away. And it kind of looked like the Bruins could be like one of those teams where, like, oh, the second half of the season's not so good. They stumble and fall into the playoffs. And you know, when they went, they lost 3 straight games in overtime. They couldn't close out a game, and then suddenly everything starts to click again. And I don't know really what it was. Did Montgomery find a new line combination? Did some guys just get hot? I don't know what it is, but this team has looked like their vintage selves again. You know, Jake DeBrusk is playing really well. David Pastrnak, you know, people were mad at him because he took that lazy penalty shot. But, like, David Pastrnak is still producing. He's still playing well. Brad Marchand has scored 20 goals for, like, the, what is it, 11th straight season or something like that. Clearly, he's still got it.
I mean, you yourself did say Pasta was kind of playing like a bit of a schmuck there for a little bit.
Oh, no, he definitely – I wasn't liking the way he was skating. I wasn't liking the effort he was putting forward. But was it him being sad about something or not having the believability? He's back in. Pasta's back in. And the team itself looks like they're all in again. So, again, I don't really know what it was. Was it just the injuries? Because there was a couple guys, you know, put some pressure on Swayman being the everyday goaltender, but I think he handled it well. You know, the depth in the defense was tested a little bit with Forbert and Carlo being out. But, like, again, not much has changed, but the line seems to just be rolling. Players seem to just be they're just clicking together again in a way they weren't a couple even days ago, it felt like.
So has the water found its level with this team?
I kind of
Can we be actually certain that what we saw this last week is what they really are?
The problem with that is now they're back in first place with the President's Trophy, and I'm still like, you're not? Are you?
You're not, though. That's not a legit. Come on.
President's Trophy.
People that know hockey, really know hockey, come on.
But at the same time, I look at everyone else and be like, well,
like that Bruins team last year, were they really on the same level as like an Yzerman Fedorov Red Wings team of the 90s. No, no, not even close, not even remote. They're not even in the same universe. This isn't a legit, like, they're not that good.
But at the same time.
So, like, what's going on?
I think they're just, they are.
Like, are they just going to have another one of these seasons again and then just get smacked in the face again by a 7 seed?
Well,
I hope at home.
You got to at least learn something. But like, I think it's just like the
Rangers. This team never learns anything. They always lose the same way in the playoffs every time they get there.
Hopefully Montgomery will
learn
something.
They make it a round or two, and this doesn't even matter as far as who the coach is. This has been happening since before Claude left.
Yeah.
You make it a round or two, you face a team that can skate on par or better than you, and their defense is just
that's another reason why a bunch of
sequoias, and they just beat the ever-loving snot out of you.
That's why I wouldn't want to play the Panthers again, because they would probably go the same way. But,
like, God forbid they do end up with the Panthers again. Can someone tell McAvoy you have to hit people the whole series?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, I kind of think, why are the Bruins still in this President's Trophy position? It's because, like, well, you know, the Rangers had a really good start. Like, I still think they played too well. Like, they're not that good. And then on the other side, because, like, you know, Hurricanes would be disappointing this season. The Devils were a team picked to be in the Stanley Cup final. They're kind of crap. I mean, sure, the Flyers have played a little bit better. Tampa and Toronto have both disappointed this season. Out of the gate, Florida disappointed. So they had a bit of a running start, the Bruins. But I still think they could maintain it and be in the running for it because, again, I think so many of these teams are fake. And then in the Western Conference, I think you have a lot of good teams. The Jets, Avalanche, the Golden Knights, Kings are actually really good. The Sharks are even surprisingly good this season. The Canucks are really good. I think they'll all just consume each other. And then there sits atop the standings again. It's just the Bruins being like, hey, how did we get here? Still think the Florida Panthers are going to do it. They're going to win the President's Trophy. I believe it.
I know.
Because, again,
I think... You put that bet out for everyone to see.
I did. And then the odds have skyrocketed.
I'm sure.
In the wrong direction.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just because the Bruins are good enough, and I think a lot of these teams are middling. Because that team last year, was it truly one of the greatest teams of all time? I guess, based on record and how well they played every day. But I also thought the rest of the league was kind of ass. And they really jumped on that. And then you face the team.
So that's another
thing. Wasn't all that great, but they just stacked up perfectly.
That's another thing. You steamrolled the league when it was sort of a down year for everyone.
And I still think it is. I still think everyone's ass, at least on your side.
Exactly. So this is my point. Like, how are we supposed to get an accurate idea as to what this team is if they're just beating up on a down league the last two seasons?
I can assure you they're not.
Season and a half.
They're not ass. I can assure you that they're not ass. Everyone else is.
No, I'm saying how are we supposed to get an accurate idea as to what the Bruins are?
You can't, but you can
at least.
If
they're beating up on a league that we deem to be ass.
You can't figure out what the truly height is, but you can at least establish the base.
Until they get to the playoffs and disappoint me again?
Don't
play. Local hockey club?
Please don't play the Florida Panthers. Because they're, that style, which everyone is going to try to play that style. I think Hurricanes as well stack up decently well, but not as well as it used to be. I think the Flyers could stack up well just because, you know, Tortorella is just going to make them fight and hit everything. But they're not ass. You heard it here first. Bruins, not ass.
I'm not in
the President's Trophy position is not ass.
I'm not saying they're ass. Did I say they were ass?
I mean, no. He said the whole league
but,
was ass.
But we can just establish they're not that.
I'm not saying what they are. I'm not saying they're ass.
Are they a top three team on their side at least?
This is what frustrates me with this team.
Yeah.
I don't know if in the league, though. Do I still think
top
you're...
Top six in the league?
I mean, you just beat the Jets, but do we think you beat the Jets in a 7-game series? I don't know.
You looked really bad
the first time you placed Winnipeg. Hmm. But you were middling in that time. You were injured, or you were more injured in that time. How do you stack up against the Golden Knights in 7-game series? They were able to not get beat up by the Panthers, mm-hmm. but it's just because they're so much faster than you. Again, they gave you fits last year when you played them, mm. both times. I don't know, is what I'm saying. I don't know.
Let's move on to the other non-football one.
I don't know what they
are,
but I know what they're not.
Awful ownership
Kind
of,
yeah.
Of the Boston Red Sox. I don't know if I've ever been more infuriated by a hometown team.
I definitely have.
Or a hometown statement than what I heard at, what was it, FanFest or whatever the hell it was the Sox were doing. To come out and say, I mean, hey, listen, I guess maybe points for honesty. We've been speculating the last 2 years, but now we know for sure it came straight from the horse's mouth. That one, they are looking to cut payroll even more. And then also when asked about then how do you have the highest ticket prices in Major League Baseball, they go, we're selling the Fenway experience. John Henry, can we just sell the team already? Like, I'm going to go to the Sox games this year with a sign that says, sell the team, Henry. And I know I'm going to have to hide it somewhere and then pull it out because they'll take it at the gate. And if they do take it, I'm posting that on Twitter for sure. Hashtag Henry stole my sign. But I've never been this infuriated. I think they have to start. We have to start talking about them on a list of worst ownership in sports right now. It's that bad. And you know what's funny? This team has talent, but in a lot of ways, the worst possible thing could be Brian Bello, Tristan Cassis take the next step. Lucas Giolito refines some good solid form, and this team is really good again. Not like really good, but like good. Like competing for the division, at least for most of the year. Because then it just... they'll just be sitting there like, we don't need to spend money.
We can trim more budget.
Yeah, we can trim more budget. The only chance I feel like that this has to change is if they go into the complete toilet this year, which I'm kind of rooting for. I hope they lose 100 games because I feel like that's the only way this could change. Because it has to be that extreme because we talked about this on the show either 2 or 3 weeks ago. I don't know. But Fenway is now such a – we're selling the Fenway experience.
Yeah.
They know – that Fenway is such a landmark that no matter what, they will make money.
Yeah.
Even if the true Sox and Boston locals don't want to show up, the rival fans will.
Yes.
The dumb college people will who don't actually care. And then also people who want to play music shows and venues and stuff will also play at Fenway. So they'll make money off the ballpark no matter what.
I mean, that statement or selling the Fenway experience, that basically is – I feel like that's admitting that like –
we're selling the Fenway experience.
That they're more care about how many beers and hot dogs they sell and just how many tickets are sold overall and how many different events they can have in the stadium and not about how many wins. Because it doesn't matter at that point. They could lose 162 games. They'll probably still make a profit. Why would they change a thing at that point?
I do think there is a chance that like if they completely – hit complete rock bottom, it could affect things enough that they might be like, all right, we cut payroll the last 2 years. We do have at least have to try and put a competitive team together. But I think it has to be that bad for anything to change. I think it has to be that like Bobby Valentine managing year where it was just so awful that they were the laughing stock of the league and not a single Boston Red Sox fan wanted to show up to Fenway. Like, it does have to be that rock bottom for anything to change.
I don't know, because they still have...
because if they sitting there at, you know, if they win 77, 76 games, that they still would have had enough draw and enough fan support and enough money made that they're not going to change anything. They have to be a laughing stock for them to change.
I don't know. I think if they make a dollar in profit,
I
no matter how
I defy you to challenge that sellout record, though, bitches.
I know. I think they've acknowledged that's over by now. They acknowledged
the sellout record?
Yeah, the sellout record.
It ended in 2013.
That's what I thought.
It was 2003 to 2013.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they still had like...
they'd tell you otherwise.
They make, you know, they've had a couple new ones every now and again.
Yeah, yeah.
I think actually the most across the league, all the leagues, is the Bruins right now, actually.
What?
Sellout. Oh. Consecutive sellouts.
Oh, that makes sense.
Might be the Bruins. But also like, you know, Henry knows. He's probably sitting there laughing at us. He didn't show up to the player or the fan fest weekend, and he said he wasn't going beforehand. Like, he knows that everyone is pissed, and he just doesn't want to hear. And he's like, yeah, because he knows you're still going to show up. You're still going to buy tickets. I'm still going to make money off you people. You're still going to be there on opening day with your frickin' hats on and your jerseys on, and you're still going to scream for a budgeted team. Yeah, let go those guys.
Well, the other problem is even if the fans don't, other people are going to fill those seats, as we've talked about. College kids and rival fan bases.
You're still my sheep.
Yeah, well, rival. But again, the problem with Fenway being such a landmark is even if the Sox fans finally take that stand, they will sell plenty of tickets to dumb college kids and rival fans.
That's why we need to protest. And we need to protest the, you know, Oakland A's fans. They protested by everyone going and just being quiet at the game. We need to everyone show up to Fenway. Everyone and their mother needs to show up.
And push it somewhere else.
No.
You just stand outside. You buy all the hot dogs outside on all the concession stands. You still you go to the pizza place. I can't remember what it's called. You still go to all the bars. And for the whole game, everyone just stands outside, shoulder to shoulder,
and doesn't let people in.
Don't go in. Everyone just stand outside.
Let other people in.
Make everyone else outside money as if everything's going off without a hitch, but do not let John Henry get a dollar of that. I'm serious.
The only way.
Everyone should crowd outside, even again, more than, like, because it was 28,000 people can fit in there.
Yeah.
About, give or take. Like, 30
block
plus,
all the exits.
30 plus thousand people should stand outside of Fenway for 181 games, because 81 home games, and just take in all the scenes from outside and do not go in. No one buy a ticket. No one go in. And when people show up, be like, I bought a ticket for this. Be like, you effing traitor. Don't you dare go in there.
Yes.
And if it's like, oh, I'm a rival team, I want to at least cheer my team. We beat their ass. We assault them in the streets.
You know, I've never been pro-rioting, but if a riot did break out down at Fenway right now.
You see what the problem is now,
I might actually, right? I might actually
join.
What
you just, like, screwed yourself so bad. Because now it's premeditated. If you just did it when it happened, it's a crime of passion. It's a lesser sentence.
Crime of passion.
He didn't say he was going to do it. He said other people.
No, the protest.
He's inciting an insurrection.
Charles Manson.
You're right. We need to overthrow the Fenway Sports Group.
Sell the team already, Henry.
They said they're not.
I know.
They literally had to come out and said, there's no plan to sell the team.
That's because they know.
They know we want it.
Everyone wants them to sell the team. I'm going into Fenway this year with a sign. It is happening. I don't know how I'm going to do it.
Buy one of those $20 tickets. Sit in the expensive seats.
Do you think what I could do is write it in pencil, make it something stupid so they'll let me in, completely acceptable, and then just erase it at my seat and then write something else in pen? Sell the team already, Henry?
It's like, why is your sign written so lightly in pencil?
Don't worry about it.
Also, why do you have so many markers?
Don't worry about it. But, I've never been...
I've
never been this distraught as a Red Sox fan.
No, I've said I've never, for any of my teams here, I've never questioned myself, like, do I want to be a fan of this team anymore?
Yeah.
But it's the Red Sox that made me do it.
I know.
Disgusting.
I know. It hurts.
Should be, Jeremy Jacobs should make me feel like this.
I don't know. I don't know if sports news ever made me physically hurt, but when I actually saw that they said that.
Tom Brady left, like, I puked.
You know what?
I saw that coming, so it was fine.
At least Jacobs owns a team in a league with, like, a real salary cap?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he makes a profit in that league. But you know what? They still spend money.
You're the effing Red Sox.
Yeah, they're one of the most profitable teams in their league.
Yeah, they were asked. Did you see that headline? Like, agents of players are asking, why are you operating like a small budget team?
Mm-hmm. I saw that. Absolutely terrible.
Like, you are the Red Sox.
Well, yeah. We want to just ensure that we're under the tax threshold.
All right. With that, we're going to take our final break. When we come back, we're going to do the championship round preview and then do our Darwin. So stick with us, guys. And we are back at Slow Your Roll, getting ready to finish things off. Quickly, let's go through the championship round. And our Darwin, as always, let's start with the first game, 3 o'clock on Sunday, Baltimore and the Kansas City Chiefs. How do we see this one going down? I know the Vegas line has been at 3.5. I think it dropped down to 3. I think it might be back at 3.5. I don't know. It's tough to short Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and the Chiefs, but I they're still limited. Buffalo does have defensive problems. Sean has McDermott at least has consistently sometimes been less than spectacular in playoffs. So it was understandable they won. I don't think they match up well with the Ravens at all. We've seen the Ravens go into the teeth of some of the better quarterbacks and offenses this season and make them look foolish. I mean, they blew out the 49ers. What was another one? Well, they hammered the Dolphins, and they handled somebody else too, and I'm just not remembering who. But the only one that got them a little bit was the Rams and Stafford. But they still won the game.
They beat the Jaguars' ass.
I wouldn't necessarily that was going into the teeth of one of the best offenses and quarterbacks or anything this year. But listen, the Ravens have embarrassed multiple teams this year. Oh, they embarrassed the Lions as well. Went into the teeth of that team, embarrassed them. So I feel like the Ravens are getting a little bit undervalued.
So who do I trust less going into this game?
Mm-hmm.
And by traditional standards, anemic Kansas City offense, again, by what the standards of what we're used to.
Mm-hmm.
I just need to throw that out there for the lummoxes that don't like to listen to prefaces.
Mm-hmm.
Do I trust that less, or do I trust Lamar Jackson less?
Because
he's shown me no reason to trust him in the playoffs at this point.
Mm-hmm. He played fine in the second half against the Texans.
Okay.
But I don't think my issue is it's not even a Lamar story. I just think the Ravens as a unit, particularly defensively.
Oh, I think the stars are aligned for this.
Yeah, game. Like I just think their defense is just so good. I think it's going to be really hard for Kansas City to really even put drives together and put up a lot of points.
It should
Like, I don't think Lamar is going to come out here and play A-plus and go gangbusters, and that's why they're going to win. I just think the Ravens roster is just so much better. Mm. Any thoughts?
I mean, that's kind of it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, kind of what I said last week. It's like, all right, we cannot count the Chiefs out just based on Mahomes, Andy Reid, history.
I know.
And, you know, Lamar and lack of history on that end.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, it's too much.
Mm-hmm.
It's too much Raven, not enough Chief.
Mm-hmm.
It has to just be the Ravens.
Yeah, I think defensively, like I said, they've embarrassed multiple teams, multiple quarterbacks, multiple coaches, many of them better than this Chiefs team. They're just so physical. They really are. They're probably the most physical team in the NFL. They're going to go right after Casey. When Casey has had offensive success this year, it's mostly been off Pacheco being able to run the ball. I think they're going to have a lot of problems trying to establish the run. In this game, Baltimore, they just come right after you and they beat you up. And I just.
Well, I guess that could be like maybe the one thing that is the downfall. Eventually, you know, these physical teams, they can often break down themselves.
Yes, but they got that bye. And I don't remember them having really any injuries in the Texans game.
Sure. But like, you know, you lose Zay Flowers and one guy up the middle.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Suddenly, this game is a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, I like the Chiefs in that situation.
Yeah, but they're multidimensional offensively. They have some better weapons for Lamar to throw to now. They run the ball great. Lamar, I'll have him run. And again, it comes back to this defense, the talent on it, McDaniel. They're good at all levels, too. I mean, no one has a great secondary left, so Baltimore's secondary is not great, but I think it's not any worse or better than anybody else who's left right now. And the linebacking core and the D-line are both elite, which a lot of teams struggle sometimes at linebacker. Their guys can go sideline to sideline. Roquan Smith has been so perfect to add into that mix. I just think they're too good. Now, I don't love it enough that I'm going to bet it at 3, 3.5. I've done too well in the betting this playoffs. I'm probably not even betting this round. But I still just think the Ravens are going to be too much for them. And we'll end up winning, not blowing them out. It's not going to be a blowout. But I do think by, like, fourth quarter, you're just going to, like, Baltimore's pulling away at least by the eye test.
Yeah,
that's how I see it going down.
I can see it's probably Ravens winning by, like, a touchdown, 10 points.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think the game will be kind of maybe similar to how that Texans game went.
Mm-hmm.
Although, the end score won't be quite as egregious.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see, like, oh, the Chiefs are keeping it close. Like, oh, man, maybe they will overthrow them. And then just, you know, come fourth quarter.
It's too much.
It's like a 7-point lead.
Yeah. I also
Ravens have the ball, eating time, get another field goal, game over.
The also thing is, like, I don't think the Chiefs have a clear coaching advantage in this game.
No.
John Harbaugh's been there, done that, proven to be a great coach. He clearly has one of the best young defensive minds in football as his DC right now, McDaniel. So I don't think there's a clear coaching edge for the Chiefs. I like Patrick more than Lamar, but I don't think it's the Grand Canyon like it is when Patrick plays a lot of other quarterbacks. And then, again, the rest of the team, it's just like the Ravens are better. So, and I've said it before. If they don't win this game, I'm still looking at Lamar right now a little bit like you're probably overpaid. Because the stars are aligned that there's no reason that this team should not be in the Super Bowl.
I do like that Lamar, he hasn't made a big deal about it.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a quote a few days ago, and he was like, better to get one now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You can never bank on, you know, certainties in this league. Like,
mm-hmm.
He knows.
Yeah.
He's going to retire.
So I'll let you guys start on the NFC Championship one if you want to start, one of you.
All right. I mean, yeah, we this is probably the one we've previewed throughout the show a little bit more and more about, like, you know, on paper it should be the Niners, but we've talked even about, like, how, you know, possibly the Lions could stack up well if it turns into a shootout, stuff like that. You know, how the believability with the Lions and stuff like that, you know, and without Debo, how much do we really like this 49ers team? I still just can't bring myself to pick the Lions.
Okay.
Every time there's been a real chance, there's been some plot twists in this NFL season, but anytime you have a chance to get the real plot twist, well, here we are still looking at the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
Both number one seeds are still here, even though, you know, had a chance to at least overthrow one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's just the narrative has never quite diverted from just the path that we've all seen from weeks now of Ravens 49ers in the Super Bowl.
Mm. No, I get you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you think it'll be close game, though? I mean, I was surprised by the Vegas line.
I think it'll be close.
Because they had it at 7, and I was like,
yeah, that's a lot.
Phony
line.
To me, that feels disrespectful.
I feel like it'll
be.
But
the Niners have been overvalued all playoffs.
They know what they're doing. That's a phony line.
I mean, hey, you say that, but they had the Packers win at 10, and I was all over that.
Do you also feel like seeing a 7-point line for odds is bigger than a game ending in a 7-point difference?
Yes, it is.
Like,
because you can play a neck and neck game, but have it be everyone just kind of scores touchdowns.
I could see this ending in just a touchdown difference, one score game.
Yeah.
But when I look at it here, like, 7 points. Like, no, it's going to be field goal 4-point difference.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, if it ended in a touchdown, I'd be like, well, Lions played them tough. They're still right there.
Yes, exactly.
But this feels like saying 7-point difference feels like, man, they're not giving the Lions any chance.
No, I know. I know what you mean. Part of the reason why you put it at 7, though, is, like, these are both potent offenses who are capable of scoring touchdowns and not having to settle for field goals.
Yeah.
So a 7-point difference in this game could be, like, your average game being a 3.5-4-point difference. It's just both teams are so efficient, so well run, so many weapons that they don't settle for field goals a lot. They're exchanging touchdowns a lot.
Mm.
So that's part of the thing for this. But yeah, I definitely feel like the Lions are not getting enough respect and the Niners are getting too much of it, just like I felt like in that Packers game. I think the Niners pass rush, I think we look at them with the lens of the last couple of years and don't see them for what they are this year. I don't think their defense is as good. I definitely don't think the pass rush is good. I think it's inconsistent at times. But the other thing is, we make up such a big deal about the San Francisco offense and how it's too much for other teams. But to me, and I was saying this during the season, the Lions stack up with the Niners better than the Eagles and the Cowboys do, because the Lions can at least match the offense. You have CMC, Debo, George Kittle, and Brandon Ayuk to worry about with the San Francisco. Now, Debo might even be out for this game, but let's say he's not. Well, the Lions can counter that with Jahmyr Gibbs, Montgomery, Laporta, and Amon-Ra St. Brown, who are almost every bit as good as everybody I just named for the Niners. A lot of them younger, too. And then you got to say that as much as I defend Brock Purdy, and I'm not a Purdy hater like everybody else is, they have the advantage of quarterback. Jared Goff is a better quarterback than Brock Purdy to this point. Jared Goff has been here more. This is his second NFC Championship game. I'm sure he's better at reading a defense than Brock Purdy is, who's just in his second year.
Technically, it is Purdy's second. But I know he had to leave the first one.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. You're right. But it's just his second year playing. So you'd think the Lions have the quarterback advantage, and then obviously there's far more pressure on San Francisco than there is Detroit, which comes to a factor if it's a close game in the fourth. So I have the Niners winning still, but I think this is going to go right down to the bitter end. I really do. Especially without Debo, we've seen how much that can take a toll on the Niners offense. And I do feel like while it's still not good, the Lions defense has at least risen to the occasion and played significantly better so far in this playoffs than they have during the regular season. So I think once again, too much respect on the Niners, not enough respect for their opponent. I think this is a down to the wire game. I'll still pick San Fran, but yeah. You know, if you want to take the 7 with the Lions, I think that's the right side.
Absolutely take those 7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You guys, any thoughts?
Hell, I'd take the 7 in this game and lay the 3.
Okay.
In the Baltimore KC game.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's how we definitely see that one going. I think the Ravens should be able to control things, especially late in the game. I think this NFC Championship's coming down to the bitter end.
Do you imagine how much more frightening Baltimore would be if Mark Andrews never got hurt?
I know. They'd feel almost unstoppable, wouldn't they?
Jesus.
I know. Because at least you can sit there and go, yeah, you know, they really only have one real option in the passing game. Like, that's the one thing you can poke a hole in with Baltimore. But, you know, if they had Andrews, man, like...
Forget about it.
I think this line would be 4, 4.5. And I think their odds for the Super Bowl were... Like, the Niners still have better odds for the Super Bowl. Not better as in as a better, but, like, the favorite to win. If they had Andrews, I think Baltimore would be the favorite to win the Super Bowl.
Maybe.
Yeah. So, all right. So, that's how we feel about the championship round. Let's finish this up with the Darwin. Wait. From what?
Is it the guy that we started the show with, basically?
Yeah.
Can we change it?
Yeah. Well, you have a different one?
I have a different one.
All right, fine. Well, we'll have to do a drum roll, and then you'll announce it.
Okay, yeah.
Everyone, drum roll, please.
All right. This week's Darwin Award winner is your average, everyday Red Sox fan. I'll explain.
So, oh, like, no, I already know where you're going with this.
Well, you know, I'm going to start off with just being dumb enough and naive enough. Because we started the offseason with the front office coming out, Red Sox front office being like, we're going full throttle. And one, just to believe that. I didn't believe that for a second.
Yeah, you called them the interest kings.
Suck.
Yeah, but Red Sox fans ate that up. We're going full throttle. We're going after Ohtani and all these other. And I had a rant being listening to all these like big name guys. It's like you need one, at least two of them. Mm-hmm. None of them. But again, they ate up the full throttle thing, and then they all are like, "Oh, we're gonna go to the Fan Fest Players Week, whatever the hell it's called, and we're gonna boo them." It's like you don't get it. Stop showing up in the first place. We're going to go there to boo them. You have to pay to get in, son. They made money. They'll take it because they made money. Don't show up. That'll send a lot more messages than a boo or tweeting at them, sell the team. Don't talk to them. Don't buy their crap. That's how you get it. That's how you really do it. I get it. We lost for 86 years, and we went to every single game. This is different. This is a entirely different thing. This is an evil that we haven't faced before, Red Sox fans. This is evil within. This is money. This is not just the Yankees beating and losing to some other team. This is your own selves that we're dealing with here.
Don't want to commit.
Yeah. Stop. Stop spending money. Don't buy the jersey. Don't buy the ticket. Don't go to Fan Fest because we're going to boo the front office. You had to pay to get in. Stop it. You don't get it.
They need to take a lesson from old Patriots fans.
Or just like, you know, A's fans. Stop showing up.
Yeah.
Well, like those old Patriots teams, right? Like
pre-Kraft?
Yeah. They had some studs on those teams. They had great players back in the day. Well, you wonder why they weren't allowed on Monday Night Football. It wasn't because they were so bad that the draw of the best quarterback in the world and the world's hottest power couple couldn't keep them on. No, they got flexed out then because they're just downright bad. Back then, you weren't allowed on Monday Night Football because you were a clown show of an organization. Something like the Red Sox. They had
there's some
the
different
balls.
Though.
And I guess, like, congratulations that John Henry has balls this large. But it really speaks to how small that man's brain must be. The audacity to offer Yamamoto an incentivized contract?
Oh, I forgot about that.
this deal could be worth up to $325 million.
You're like, this isn't football, bro.
Get out of here.
That's not how baseball works.
Get out of here. 16 years ago, you paid $50 million to sit down over dinner and talk with the hottest pitching prospect.
Oh, Dice K? When there was that one?
Now you're trying to offer the hottest pitching commodities, incentivized contracts?
like it's football. Like, that's not how baseball works, man. It's all guaranteed. All right.
Screw you, John.
Yeah. Congratulations to the average Red Sox fan. And, man, we hate John Henry. That has been it for Slow Your Roll this week. Have a great rest of your week, ladies and gentlemen. Pleasure as always, Brian.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen.